This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with me, Melissa Idris, also Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani. 7:46 right now. I will be speaking to Amir Mirzai from Waze on The Breakfast Grill in about 20 minutes or so. Now, do both of you guys use Waze?
Of course. Absolutely.
Are you Waze users? Ibrahim, I know you're a big Waze user.
I am a Waze royal. Thank you very much.
What does that mean?
He says he claims to be of Waze royalty because he's allowed to edit maps.
So Waze...
Really?
In terms of gamification of the utilization of Waze, you can actually go to your user name and actually see your scoreboard. And the more you use Waze, the more you can extract value from that app.
You know, you'd be surprised, but Malaysia is in one of the top five highest number of users in the world for Waze. We love our Waze.
This is in tandem with Facebook, right? Facebook says the same thing.
Traffic jams, right?
I think so. Yeah. I think this is traffic jams. Yeah. But I think today on The Breakfast Grill, I'm going to be getting down into the specifics of Waze. I mean, do you even know how Waze works, how it came to be, how they make money? I mean, all these basic questions. I use Waze without thinking about what goes behind this app. And I think I'm really looking forward to speaking with Amir this morning to find out more about how the business is run.
I thought Google just gives them money.
That's right. Google bought them in 2013 for over $1 billion. So let's see whether making money is a top priority for Waze.
Sorry, this is unrelated, but Facebook also bought over WhatsApp, right, for $19 billion. Mm-hmm. And Facebook has only something like 19 or 20 employees across the world just to handle WhatsApp.
Oh, wow.
And they're worth like 20-something billion bucks.
So per ratio, it's like 1 billion per employee, something like that.
Yeah, something crazy like that. Wow. Wouldn't you love to start a company like that?
Yes, I would.
That's how you make money. You don't need sales, right? You just need to get bought over by some giant.
By Google or Facebook. Yeah, that's the dream. 7:48 right now. Air Asia's shareholders have approved a planned placement of 559 million new shares to Tune Life at RM1.80 each. Now, of course, Tune Life is owned by Tan Sri Tony Fernandez and Dato' Kamarudin Maranun.
Yeah, the original founders of AirAsia. And of course, earlier on, there was a lot of talk about the rights of minority interests. Questions were being asked as to why the AirAsia duo did not go for a rights issue, but instead went for a private placement, which diluted minority shareholders. But I guess this is a true vote of confidence right now. And then I guess minority shareholders are kind of secured in the fact that the founders now have more skin in the game. They're more committed to the company.
Yeah, because that announcement came as a unanimously approved decision by the shareholders. So that skin in the game, Julian, you're talking about, that brings about previously 18% or 18.9% of ownership to now 32%. So imagine the original founders now own one third of AirAsia again. So it's fantastic.
Put your money where your mouth is, right? That means there were rumors circulating that Tony had lost focus or they were going to retire. But now they're saying, look, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is and really prove to the market, right? There's also news that that Tony Fernandez said that he's not ruling out the consolidation of AirAsia's regional airline units into one single entity. He said that that's always been his plan to consolidate, but there's no time frame on it because he has to talk to a whole lot of different parties and authorities for this.
All these different subsidiaries that are being housed in various different countries. You've got Philippines, Thailand, and so on. But he cites ASEAN open skies as one of the reasons why there should be a truly ASEAN company in AirAsia. Laos was the last ASEAN country to sign into ASEAN open skies. So this seems like very exciting times for AirAsia.
You know, AirAsia was created because of the Ryanair model that Tony saw and actually learned when he was in the UK. And it's quite bizarre why the company structure is not the same as it is in Ryanair or isn't as with EasyJet, for instance. And Tasi Tony was mentioning that perhaps the reason is because of the company laws that exist within the various countries countries within ASEAN. And that is the reason why all these companies are created. And it's not, you know, economically driven by a business decision. It's basically incumbent by law. And this is something that he wants to overcome.
Well, if he gets over that, then, you know, it's a huge boon for AirAsia. It's a very smart move to want to consolidate all this. Think of all the synergy and cutting off all the excess fat, right?
That's right. It makes sense, actually, to share costs and to share revenues. But the other big thing is that they may set up an international headquarters in Thailand. Is this a big blow to Malaysia?
Yeah, I mean, that for me, that's curious. Should AirAsia, and we're speculating here, should AirAsia consolidate and perhaps set up a headquarters in Thailand? Then that's, I mean, why that market? Right? Why choose to have a physical presence there instead of... heading home quarters.
I think cost would be it, but there's also political buy-in. Jatusri Pirat, which is Thailand's deputy prime minister, he's open to AirAsia setting up headquarters in Thailand. But I think the core reason could be because of Suvarnabhumi Airport. The infrastructure is great, the traffic's fantastic, and it's not that expensive if you compare against Changi, for instance. All the reasons why you would want to set up Bangkok as your headquarters would be there.
I wonder if it's also political posturing, because a few years ago, Indonesia also trumpeted the idea that they will set up in Indonesia.
I think
they have a kind of headquarters there as well. So I guess Malaysia needs to buck up in terms of offering the best of low-cost travel to not just AirAsia, but any airline at all.
7.53 right now, and 1MDB will have to make an interest payment on a second bond it issued, which is due tomorrow. So 1MDB says it hasn't yet decided whether or not to pay, except that it is exploring all options. This is a story according to the Edge Financial Daily.
So this is the 6% coupon rate that was arranged by Goldman Sachs that we raised all the hue and cry when Arul Kanda came over on the breakfast grill with us. This debt was issued in 2012 and was issued by the 1MDB Energy Limited, and the proceeds were used to finance Ananda Krishnan's assets, power assets.
Okay, so just let me get this straight. The first bond payment that was the whole controversy about was for the Langat Energy bond, right? Mm-hmm. And this
That's
is a
right.
second bond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
And
there
are also IPIC related. I recall that IPIC actually forced a technical default on 1MDB bonds, and now 1MDB is really forced to fight fire in that, hiring a financial advisor and another company to identify bondholders. Who would you have known that you don't know who your creditors are, right? And that's a normal thing for bonds. So hence the need to hire a third party service to really set up a website. Nothing more than setting up a website and really calling to bondholders, hey, what are your problems, let us answer them for 1MDB.
Yeah, one of the companies that was appointed is Alvarez & Marsal Asia Limited, ANM, to financially advise 1MDB. And of course, DF King Limited is also hired to directly carry out the bondholder identification and registration processes.
So the last time we saw the dispute between 1MDB and IPIC about interest payments of a bond, we saw the market really, there was volatility in the market, the ringgit really took a hit. And that was, you know, in the week preceding up to it. Now that interest bond payment is due tomorrow, do you think we will see the same kind of effect?
Yeah, I think we're already seeing it, because you saw the ringgit. At first, we were all very happy that the ringgit went down to the 390 level.
Yes.
But it has weakened to beyond 4 today. And certainly, it can be said that, you know, 1MDB has impact on the ringgit as well as the wider investor perception of Malaysia.
You know, Alvarez & Marsal is also experts in insolvency. I don't know whether it was timely for them to get an insolvent law firm or you know, IP firm.
Is this a bad omen that we should be worried about?
But
on another note, there is also this other news that Khazanah is seeking to pair stakes in a few GLCs like Tanaga and IHH Healthcare and Axiata Group. And also, I guess, together with 1MDB, this really raises our old rant of whether the government should be in business at all. I think it's a good thing that Khazanah is trying to sell down their stakes in these companies.
Okay, 7.56 right now. IOI is challenging its RSPO certification, and related news as well. Felda Global Ventures urging RSPO, the Roundtable of Sustainable Palm Oil, to re-examine their existing certification standards for the tens and thousands of smallholders who currently do not have the means to apply for them.
So there is a difference between what IOI intentions are and what FGV wants to do. FGV wants to protect the smallholders who would find it too costly to keep to RSPO's requirements. But IOI actually says that they actually want to proceed with, to comply with RSPO's requirements. Also, they're fully committed to those points.
You know, FGV has a new CEO, Dato' Zakaria Arshad, and he was a Felda settler's son. He did grow up from one of the small, settlers' environment. And I think Dato' Zakaria understands better the smallholders' plights and woes. And I think for FGV to say that they want to re-examine existing certification standards for the tens of thousands of the smallholders who do not currently have the means to apply for them is very much in tandem with how he grew up. So I guess he's a champion for the small guys in the oil palm industry.
But I don't know. I mean, will that have any impact for FGV? Because a large part of their output is from smallholders, right? I mean, they have a large holding of smallholders. So to have the certification, they voluntarily withdrew their certification. Yeah. Does that mean, I mean, is that a sign that perhaps they're saying, I don't care about this certification?
I don't know about that because I guess they want to take a very staggered approach to this. They've only suspended certification for about 58 mils out of the many that they have. So I think this is a half and partial compliance. And it also depends on where FGV sells to, because the certification really is a matter for the Europeans, right? They want to busy themselves with environmental factors, which is not unimportant. But IOI is the people who want to comply with this, because there are very big clients, very big palm oil consumers in the form of Nestle, all those huge food conglomerates, Wilmar also being one of them, being very concerned about the environment.
Yeah, and one thing's for certain, IOI has made a full committed statement saying that they are always committed to adhere to RSPO requirements, and they place great importance in ensuring the systems are in place. But, you know, when we talk about RSPO, it's also not just about Malaysia, it's about Indonesia as well. And these two countries have different laws, and these two countries have different kind of requirements to meet up with the RSPO. So it's just regulation all around. And I think this, in a way, in my opinion, inhibits business.
I think the situation in Indonesia is quite interesting because they have a bigger focus on the downstream areas of palm oil production.
Refining
and so on, because they have these export taxes. So they discourage the planters over there, more than Malaysia, not 100%, but more than Malaysia, they discourage people from exporting their raw, the crude palm oil out, and have a lot of them refined within Indonesia. And I guess Indonesia being one of the biggest producers in the world, be interesting to see that dichotomy of policies between Indonesia and Malaysia.
7:59 right now. We've got the 8 o'clock news coming up next. But after that, The Breakfast Grill. I'll be speaking with Ame Mirzai, Business Development Lead for APAC, EU and the US for the navigation app Waze. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.